Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 117 of UFO Encounters Worldwide. This is your host, Jesse Peek, MUFON field investigator in the state of Pennsylvania, city of Philadelphia. And I want to welcome everyone to today's episode. We're going to be welcoming special guest Robert Spearing. Robert was on the show before. He's MUFON's Director of Investigations International. He's investigated some of the top cases that have come across MUFON. And he is also one of the best investigators that I know in the field. Very thorough, boots on the ground. He's done many lectures and given information on the cases that he's worked. So today we're going to be discussing some of those top cases from 2023. And we're also going to get into some of the new changes and updates that MUFON has made this past year. Some really cool stuff going on. Always trying to make the organization better. So we'll be talking about all that today. Some really cool stuff for sure. Today's episode is sponsored by the 2024 Curiosities Festival coming up on May 4th. That's going to include speakers on the UFO phenomenon, the paranormal, Bigfoot. We're going to have live bands there, over 100 plus vendors, all kinds of cool stuff. Tickets are only $5 a person. If you have a family of five, it's only $20. So come enjoy a full day from 12 p.m. to 7 p.m. at night. That's the 2024 Curiosities Festival. You can get all that information and the ticket link over at our website at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com. So without further ado, let's go ahead and bring our special guest on. So strap on them seatbelts. We're going for a ride. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 117 of UFO Encounters Worldwide. This is your host, Jesse Peek, MUFON field investigator in the state of Pennsylvania, city of Philadelphia. And today we are welcoming our special guest, Robert Spearing. Robert, welcome to the show today.
Hi, Jess. Very nice to have you be with you today. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the second time I've had you on. Great conversation last time. And of course, you're doing some great work at MUFON, always doing new cases, really good cases at that. And it's nice to bring you on and talk about that and kind of the new stuff going on with MUFON. So thank you.
You're more than welcome. Thank you.
You're the Director of Investigations International for MUFON. But for everybody that doesn't know, could you give us like a quick background of what your job is, what you do?
Okay. It's interesting. I used to run the SAT team, special assignment team for MUFON, which was sort of like the X-Files of the high strangeness cases. But they pretty much integrated that into other avenues of development. So when that dissipated, they asked me if I wanted to be Director of International Investigation. Steve Hudgens had retired at that point, and they needed somebody to handle all of the field investigator and investigations outside of the United States. The second most reports that we get at MUFON come from Canada, then England, then Australia, and then France. They're the big ones. And then there was a lot of smaller countries where we don't have any national director and we don't have any field investigators. In that case, I oversee what's called the CAG International Group, or Case Assistance Group. And they're a group of investigators outside of, say, a small country like Morocco, where we may get one report a year. And that team for me, that I have Fred Kohler working for me, overseeing that team, they do all of the cases in countries where we don't have any investigators. So that's my main job, is to make sure that investigators are thorough in their investigations. We have what's called a Form 30, which is what the investigator fills out when they get assigned a report, and it will ask a lot of things like geographic location, what was the weather like, if there were any photos and videos to be analyzed. We have a section for that. If it's, say, an underwater case, we have a dive team. We have all sorts of special teams. If it's an ERT case, which is experiencer resource team case outside the United States, I work with that team to make sure that they get assigned as a support investigator and that there is an actual investigator investigating those type of cases also. But then they throw they throw the towel at me, the proverbial wet towel, and they have me doing all sorts of other types of things. I was involved with the creation of the internal social network for members called the Observer Network. We have about 5,000 members in MUFON, and about 2,000 of them actively use this this perk of membership, corresponding with each other. Think of it as like a MUFON Facebook group page. And then I was also involved with some other projects, such as the creation of our UFO map app, and also the recently released Project Aquarius Digital Library. So I also speak at the symposium every year on the top cases of interest. I write a lot of journal articles. I write the newsletter every 2 weeks for MUFON, and I update the front page of MUFON.com. So they have me doing all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, definitely a busy guy for sure. and our sponsor of the show is the 2024 Curiosities Festival, which is coming up on May 4th. You're going to be one of the speakers there speaking on UFOs, which is really cool because you do handle these top cases and people are always interested in them. So it's good. We're looking forward to having you there to speak as well.
Yes, I look forward to speaking at the Curiosities Festival myself. It sounds like it's going to be a very, very interesting day with the sword swallowers and stuff, I've heard. So I look forward to it immensely.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we got a girl who's going to be playing with fire and hula hoops, so that should be good too. Live performances, pretty cool stuff. It's just neat. So yeah, I mean, there's like you brought up a couple of really good points that MUFON has made some updates and some changes within the past year, especially Project Aquarius. Could you kind of tell us about that a little bit and what all that entails?
Sure. Well, it entailed a lot. Basically, about 25 years ago, MUFON began acquiring a library of material that was in paper form. Thousands of newspaper clippings, private collections from researchers, in particular, the Leonard Stringfield notebooks. There's 64 of them, as well as all of Captain Ruppelt's 120 personal folders that he had during his tenure as head of Project Blue Book in the 1950s. And there's some very, very interesting correspondences in these private collections. It's not only Ruppelt and Stringfield. We have many, many more. MUFON also kept a collection of anything that had to do with the reported MJ-12 Majestic group, and we've all released these now as part of a digital library because over the years this stuff was scanned. In particular, one section called Mars, which originally was called Project Pandora. Mars is short for MUFON Archiving System. We had 6,000 pages of old paper MUFON reports that had never seen the light of day. These reports were from the 60s, 70s, 80s, and early 90s before we went digital. And once a person mailed in the report, a field investigator would call them up on the phone or go out in the field to do an investigation, and the case was closed out. And all of those files just sat in a file cabinet for decades. Wow. And they've all been scanned. The names and addresses have all been redacted for the protection of the witnesses, and that compromises the first room of the Project Aquarius Library. The second room, of course, is the private collections room. Additionally, we have scanned and released over 40 years of MUFON journals. Okay, if you became a member after 2014, 2014 on, raw digitized, and you can go to them on the MUFON.com website. But from 1967, when they were called Skylook Magazine, up until 2012, this has all been digitized now and put in a separate room of the Project Aquarius Library. Not only that, we have over 40 years in the next room of symposium proceedings booklets. Basically, if you go to our main convention every year, which, by the way, will be in Dallas July 12th to the 14th this year, you get a book, and it will tell you who the speakers are, what they're speaking about, and it's an invaluable resource because we have over 40 years of these now scanned and uploaded. So you can see what Stanton Friedman was talking about in 1984, for example, at a MUFON symposium, a fascinating collection of items. In the spring or midsummer, we're hoping to get a new revised map up, a digital UFO map, and that will have not only on level one all of the MUFON 136,000 case database all mapped out around the globe with videos and with pictures, but also level two will be the NICAP chronology, which Fran Ridge has given us. We will also have the original Larry Hatch database, the first computerized database. It was actually made in DOS. And we will also have several countries donating their UFO databases to us. So it will be a multi-level map. And that's pretty much what Project Aquarius is. It's going to be 8 rooms when it's finished. Right now it's 6. And it's very, very inexpensive. You don't have to be a MUFON member. They're offering it as a $50 a year library card. Just for the Ruppelt files alone, I think it's worth it. There's some fascinating things. I'll tell you this, Ruppelt was very interested in whether Eisenhower actually did meet aliens at an Air Force base. And there's actually a typed memo where he is inquiring about that for Project Blue Book. So that sort of lends more credence to the Eisenhower meeting an alien story, if you're into that type of history. So that's pretty much what Aquarius is about. It's a vast library. One room is going to be free to the public, no membership necessary, and that's the newspaper clippings room. And that will grow and grow and grow. We have all of the APRO newspaper clippings from file cabinet number one. David Mahler has just found file cabinet number 3 and got it in his possession. I believe file cabinet 2 is lost forever. But we have thousands and thousands and thousands of newspaper clippings, historical ones, free to the public, covering probably 300 or 400 years of newspapers. So that's Aquarius. And I hope everybody would look into it for $50. It's amazing what you're going to get, and it's only going to continue to grow.
Yeah, what I love about it is it's everything in one place. You don't have to go and search all different websites to get this information. MUFON made it nice and easy and put it in one place so you can actually do your research, you know, to a full extent, which is great. So it's awesome to have that, and I think everybody should take advantage of it, especially for $50. You know, you can't beat that. The work's basically done for you, and it's all sitting right there in front of you. So, really cool.
And it's beautifully designed. It's like when you go in, you see 7 doorways in front of you. All right, very modern look to it. And you click on a doorway, and it will bring you into whatever room you wish to go to: the private collections room, the symposium proceedings room, the newspaper clippings room, the MUFON journal room. It's beautifully done.
This gets me excited for the future of MUFON too. You know what I mean? Because this is so cool having to be able to have something like this to offer members and people that want to get involved. So I can only imagine where we're going to be, you know, 10, 20 years from now, and how cool it's going to be, you know, growing at that point, you know?
Well, yes. As a matter of fact, I forgot the one room I didn't mention was what we have a drawings gallery. And what we did was go through all 136,000 cases, and we pulled out all of the witness drawings that witnesses drew over the past 30 years. And we have about 7,000 plus drawings. And it's a very, very interesting visual tool because you can see that people are drawing the same thing over and over again. Especially the one that surprised me most was chevrons, the V-shaped objects with the large lights on the bottom. It's incredible. We must have 75 people drawing the same thing, which definitely tells you that there's some sort of pattern there. The other thing that we discovered when we built this gallery is that in a temporal sense, we see craft of a certain type. Just for example, if you went from, I'm making this up, but just MUFON case 80,001 to MUFON case 80,300, you may see the predominant shape of the objects is a triangle. And then from case 100,001 to 100,300, you'll get discs. So it seems that whoever the agents or visitors are. I'll never say aliens or time travelers or interdimensionals, but whoever is visiting us, they seem to come in flaps over time with a certain type of vehicle. And I thought that was one of the most fascinating things that we came up with. But I just want to say one more thing about the drawings gallery. Some people who submit drawings to us, they're sort of stick figure and primitive, but some people actually paint paintings and give us architectural drawings or you know, charcoal sketches because they're really artists. Some of these are absolutely fascinating to look at and beautiful. So that's another reason I think it's worth $50.
Yeah, absolutely. All them correlations too, like you said, to be able to put that together. I mean, that's great. You can't find that anywhere else. I don't know any other organization that has something like that, you know, where you can actually do great research and have everything at your hands. So
that's correct. I'm a patterns guy, so I love to look for patterns and then see things like that.
That's an investigator right there, right?
Yep.
So there's also the new app that came out on the phone this past year. I've downloaded it. I've checked it out. But could you tell us about that and how you can get it on your phone?
Yeah, it's only available in Android. And right now we're revamping the case management system. All right. We're doing a lot of changes to it. We just moved from an old, outdated server to a massive new server, and we're doing a lot of coding work. So right now the app isn't updating, but it is basically a map of the globe, and I believe it goes up to case 131,000, and you can click anywhere in the world on an icon, and the icons are shape-specific: discs, triangles, unknown shapes, entities, and when you click it, it will open up and show you the long narrative that the witness has submitted. So when we're finished doing all of our coding, this is going to be integrated into the Project Aquarius map, all right, which you could get through the subscription. But that map under Aquarius will be a multi-level one, and that you'll have to, you know, purchase a subscription for. The app that's currently on the Google Play Store, for example, I believe is only $2, but it gives you access to about 131,000 cases that we've mapped all over the globe.
Yeah, you can't beat that. That's absolutely great. I wish there was more stuff like that prior. So it's great that MUFON's taking the initiative and doing this. It's great.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it seems that some other groups took our cue, because apparently Enigma Labs came out with a map right after that, and now New Fork has a map. So everybody seems to be following MUFON's lead.
Oh, wow. How about that? I didn't know that. So one of the big things that I love about MUFON when I joined, you know, and when I wanted to become a field investigator, was MUFON's university, the training that MUFON goes through for their field investigators to get them out in the field to be able to do proper investigations. We had certifications all over on MUFON University, but we just did some major updates, which I think is absolutely amazing because we're changing with the times. And it just shows you, you know, how important we think training is for our field investigators. Could you talk about what updates were made to the university and what people can expect becoming a field investigator?
Sure. MUFON University, I guess, at this point, was created about 12 years ago. And the platform that it was on was rather primitive. And the courses were rather primitive. And what our director of training, Mindy Tautfest, and our director of membership, Terry Lynn Keel, and I, and DOI Steve Hudgens, and our IT person, did was go into the old one, take out everything that was outdated, move everything to a new platform, and then Mindy and Terry spent months recreating videos, bringing them up to date, PowerPoint presentations, and basically it is a state-of-the-art digital university. If you want to become a field investigator, essentially what you do is you purchase the field investigator manual. And at the back of the manual, after reading it, and the manual is quite interesting. You can get it online or in hard copy. At the back, there's instructions on how to take the test to become a field investigator. And it brings you essentially to the MUFON University portal, where you would take an electronic test based on what you've learned in the manual, a lot of astronomy, some trigonometry, how to use a radiation detector, that type of thing. And if you pass the test, you become what's called a FI-1 trainee, field investigator trainee. And there will be basic courses in investigation that open up for you at your level that, since you're already a member, there's nothing to buy. This is for your training only. If you take all of the courses for an FI-1 trainee, it opens up a second level of courses for you to become an FI-2. And we have different levels of field investigators because they need different levels of expertise. So as you move along, your state director, say if you're in Kansas, will ask our MUFON University administrator, please open courses up for Joe Smith, who's just completed the trainee level. And then so on and so on, and you will eventually go up to an FI-3. FI-3 is a level where you not only are quite capable of going out in the field, taking samples, know how to use radiation and electromagnetic equipment, how to take photographs, how to make grids, understand astronomy, understand photo analysis. It's really, really beautifully done. And not only that, you can apply to become a member of the Experiencer Resource Team, which deals with people who've been, I hate these words, abducted, who experience something. And that opens up another level of courses for you. After that, if you have a desire to go into management as a state director or a national director, more courses will open up for you. And the beauty of it is there are no tests, okay? It is all videos and it is all PowerPoint presentations in a very, very sophisticated looking package. And all you have to do is watch the videos, learn from the PowerPoint presentations, and then move on to the next level. And all in all, depending, if you wanted to take every single course in probably 10 different groups of courses, the whole thing would probably take you 3 to 4 hours to go through. That's how comprehensive it is.
That's great. That's amazing. I'm happy that they made the updates, you know, because I think when you're in this field, we know that technology changes, the way the field is, it changes. So having these updates and these new courses to take is great to keep us as sharp as we are when we have to go out in the field and do proper investigations. So I think it's an amazing thing that they did.
Yeah, what's interesting is that when MUFON University first came out, if you wanted to buy a radiation detector or an EMF meter, a tri-field meter, they were an instrument that you had to buy from some sort of electronics company. Today, a lot has changed, and a lot of these things are available as apps with a certain attachment that you would put on your iPhone, for example. You don't even have to buy the physical tools anymore. Your cell phone can do so much. Another thing is that websites have become more and more sophisticated. 12 years ago, when MUFON University came out, there was no Flight Radar 24 that was able to track transpondered aircraft. Stellarium and InTheSky.org have become much more sophisticated. There's websites where you can track Starlink, okay, because we get so many reports now of Starlink trains that people don't know what they are. We can easily close a case out as identified Starlink launch because it's so easy to find it online. They're the types of things that these courses offer you as, informationally.
Yeah, that's great. That's absolutely great to have. And that's another thing I want to get to. We're at the end of the first half, but when we come back, I want to touch on some of the top cases that you kind of worked on throughout 2023, because you always get amazing cases across your desk, and the investigation is always amazing to hear. So let's go ahead and take our break, and we'll be back right after these commercial messages. Hello, everybody. This is your host, Jesse Peake. happy to announce coming up this year in 2024 on May 4th is the Curiosities Festival, which will include speakers in the field of ufology, the paranormal, and Bigfoot. We'll also be having live performances throughout the day, live bands, food, activities, and more. Tickets will only be $5 a person, and it'll be from 12 p.m. to 7 p.m. at night. Again, this is for the 2024 Curiosities Festival. You can get this information over at our website at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com. We look forward to seeing you there. This is your host, Jesse Peek. Check out our official website at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com. Read up on UFO articles, including abductions, close encounters, sighting cases, megalithic structures, and more. Also, check out our new Facebook group. You'll get updates on guests every week, new events coming up, and our schedule of who we're going to have on in the future. Again, that's UFO Encounters Worldwide Facebook group and our website at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com.
Have you always been curious about the unknown, the unexplainable? Do you find yourself intrigued by the mysterious and paranormal side of our world? Then let's find out, with co-host Diego, is the podcast for you. Join in on an adventure into the world of the inexplicable and get insights from experienced researchers, investigators, and experts. Listen to mind-bending discussions and fascinating stories as Let's Find Out explores the strange, mysterious, and paranormal. Let's Find Out with co-host Diego is a unique and engaging podcast that uncovers the mysteries of the cryptic and unknown. With insightful interviews and discussions, they discover the very latest theories, discoveries, and investigations that may someday give us the final answer as to what may be behind the veil of reality. Available on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, YouTube, iHeartRadio, Radio Public, TuneIn, and Rumble.
UFO Encounters Worldwide wants to hear from you. Have an experience or a sighting you want to share? Contact your host, Jesse Peek, at ufoencountersworldwide@gmail.com today.
UFO Encounters Worldwide would like to announce our brand new home at the UNX Network. Listen to us every Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to hear UFO Encounters Worldwide podcast. That's on the UNX Network. All right, welcome back to the second half of episode 117. We're sitting down with our special guest, Robert Spearing, MUFON's Director of Investigations International. So you always come across some of the best cases come across your desk, and usually you present the top cases every year for MUFON at the symposiums. And we're always interested in hearing some of these really good cases that you've investigated. Could you share some of them from last year with us?
Yeah, basically what I do every year, and I don't wait till the end of the year to do it because it's a lot of work. I go through approximately 5,000 cases.
Wow.
Okay. And that's what we get per year. And some of them have video, some of them have photos, some of them have drawings. Some of them just have great narratives. So when I do the cases of interest presentation, I have to find the balance between, you know, what's really, really interesting, what did we solve, what did we not solve, you know, and the format that I usually use is I'll build up to a case of interest by showing a pattern, okay, that it's just not a one-off, and it's really interesting some of the things that we come up with. For example, the likely working title right now for my presentation in the summer is going to be Portals, Animals, Craft, and Entities. And basically, it's going to be four suites of cases. And whenever I can, I get the actual investigator on the case if they're attending the symposium to present it themselves. If they're not there, I'll present the case. So just for example, entities. A very strange story tipped me off to this. I have a very good friend who's a psychiatrist, and she knows I'm interested in UFOs. And she said to me, Bob, I have this one patient that told me a story you'd probably like. And the story was that it was a woman, paralyzed, sleep paralysis, wide awake, and she saw a little hooded entity come into her bedroom. She couldn't tell if it was a gray or not. And the thing went up to the woman's neck and began drilling into the back of her skull. And the woman believed that she had some sort of implant put into her head. It wasn't a MUFON case. I thought it was very interesting. But then about a month later, I got a case from Australia where the same thing happened. A woman was laying in bed and felt a little gray, in this case, come in and began doing something on the back of her neck. And it was a really, really strange case. So what's beautiful about the MUFON case management database is that you can do all sorts of searches. You know, because you're a field investigator, you can do a search time-wise between, say, January and December 2023, and you can pick a shape, triangle, you can pick a color, black, or you can do what are called keyword searches. And I decided to do keyword searches for neck, skull, and drill. And it was scary.
Really?
How many times people all over the world, maybe 7,000 miles away in Australia and someone in New York, all right, report the same thing happening to them. So the question becomes, is it some sort of psychic experience? Is it some sort of, you know, Jungian group unconsciousness, some sort of symbols in dreams that people are seeing? Or is it a real experience that these people are experiencing? I personally believe that it's a real experience. And the question becomes, what are they drilling into people's skulls for? You know, how do they achieve sleep paralysis with all of these people? And, you know, is there really some sort of implant in their, you know, neck or skull? This is why I always tell people, when I have a case where somebody thinks that they have an implant, a simple stud finder, the type of tool that you would use to find a nail in a wall, if you run that over somebody's body part where they believe that they have some sort of metallic implant, and this tool only costs $15, it will register if there's something metallic in the person's body. So that's pretty much where I'm going with the first suite of cases. The second suite of cases concerns the jellyfish. And I know you'd like to talk about the jellyfish in a bit, so I'm going to bypass that right now. We can tackle that as a separate topic.
That sounds
but
good.
The third one, this year, for whatever reason, there were a lot of bizarre animal cases. In some cases, animals were kidnapped. In some cases, there was an attempted kidnapping. In some cases, there was an actual abduction with a craft. And then in Texas and Oklahoma later on, there were a series of cattle mutilations. So I'm going to start with the smallest animal, and I'm going to go to the biggest animal. Basically, we had two cases this year where a person actually witnessed what seemed to be a bird flying, suddenly getting caught up in a beam of light, flailing wildly and getting sucked up into the sky by some unknown force where the beam was coming from. And what's weird is that it happened twice. Two different witnesses in two different states observed the same thing happening to birds, which I find quite unusual. We had a case in England where a police officer was called to the scene of a farm where sheep were stampeding because there was some sort of object following them around. The police officer gets on scene, watches this object, and declared that it was nothing that he had ever seen before. It was no sort of quadcopter or whatever. There were no apparent drone users in the area, but whatever this object was focused in on the sheep and causing them great panic. Another case, which I found the most disturbing one of all, took place in Delaware. And essentially, girl was on vacation, 17-year-old girl with her parents. They were at a summer resort. They had a bungalow. And behind the bungalow, maybe 200 feet away, was the start of a forest, sort of like Green Acres type backdrop. And the girl's looking out the window. The window's open. And she sees this bluish silver metallic sphere about 30 feet long with purple running lights on it. And it comes basically almost in front of her window, 200-300 feet out over the trees, and it stops. And she sees it drop what she believes was a chunk of meat out the bottom of the cylinder. Then she sees a coyote approaching to check out the chunk of meat. As soon as the coyote reaches the chunk of meat, whoosh, gets sucked up into the cylinder. She can hear what sounds like bones crunching. And then she sees the coyote get dropped out of the cylinder and the cylinder takes off. She goes out to look at the coyote. This is 9 o'clock in the morning, mind you, 9 o'clock in the morning. She goes out to look at the coyote and there's no blood and there's no bones. The bones had been removed. It was basically the skin and the fur laying there. She runs inside to get her camera, comes out a couple of minutes later and it's gone. She goes back in the house and her mother says, "Where have you been?" She goes, "I went out to take a picture of something." She goes, "It's 1 o'clock in the afternoon. We've been looking for you since 9 o'clock this morning." Wow. All right. All I can say is that girl was pretty lucky. She didn't get sucked up into the thing and, you know, right, thrown back out boneless. That was probably one of the creepiest cases I ever heard. And we didn't have any drawings or anything for that, but we do have a field investigator who's a police forensic artist, and they're actually making us a series of drawings to use in the PowerPoint presentation. Woman's an excellent artist. And finally, there was a mass cattle killing, mutilation in Texas. 5 cows surgically removed their organs. And then there was finally a case that Mindy Tautvest did in Oklahoma. She actually went out to the scene and there were some very interesting things going on. The cow, and this is interesting, a lot of people don't know this with cattle mutilations, is that a lot of times the body is found in an east to west positioning. Okay. Why this is, I don't know, but she was able to get samples. And for any of your listeners who don't know, MUFON actually has its own laboratory in Missouri, and we now have the ability to test DNA. So all of the samples from this mutilated cow have been sent to our lab, and we're waiting DNA analysis and other analysis to see if there's any sort of, you know, residual film or whatever from whatever surgically killed this animal. Not only that, also on the farm, there was a smaller type of bovine animal whose name escapes me right now, and it was missing its horns. They were laser removed, clean cut, that could have only been done by a laser. So you have to ask yourself, you know, who or what is out in the middle of a field surgically removing organs, why they're doing it, why are they positioning the bodies a certain way, and why are they using lasers to cut the horns off of animals? And the sickest thing is that this has been going on for centuries. There are actual reports from the 1800s of this going on, long before you would have, you know, what people thought of as aliens. Long before, you know, theories that the FBI has, such as, you know, cult activity going on, long before, you know, the black helicopters that may be tracing radioactivity along rivers in the United States and then killing the cattle to surgically remove body parts to see, you know, how fast the radiation traveled, that type of thing. So whatever's going on has been going on for a long time. It's very sophisticated, the operation, and we still don't know.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at it, we've only had laser capabilities the past couple of decades. So to have those precision cuts made, we didn't have that kind of technology at one point, and it was being done. So it makes you think for sure.
So that's the type of things that I'm going to be presenting in suites at the symposium that this coming July 12th to the 14th.
And that you, in the first case that you talked about, you said there was that object that you can run over someone's body and it finds out there's a metal piece inside there. Do you know what that was called, what tool that is?
Oh, sure. It's a stud finder.
Oh, stud finder. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you can get them at Home Depot.
Yep. I got one.
$15. And it's amazing. We did the Pine Bush UFO Festival 2 years ago.
Yep.
And we had a MUFON tent. And we were just asking people passing by, you know, if they had anything to report. And one guy came up to us and said, I think I have an implant in my hand. And we were with the New York State director at the time, Sam Falvo, who had a stud finder with him. And sure enough, the guy had something metallic deep inside his hand. You know, but now the thing you have to remember with implants is that a lot of times and probably the majority are not implants. They're some sort of industrial accident or splinter or something that happened to the individual
right. Maybe
decades before, and they've just forgotten about it or didn't realize that something foreign is still in their body. But when you have a collection of objects like Daryl Sims has, all right, and I've seen Daryl's collection. He brought it to a symposium one day. The majority of these objects seem to be very solid little balls that can't be crushed, that they find up people's noses and you know, in people's deep inside someone's ear or in their foot. And the question is, they all look the same, so there has to be some sort of pattern to why they're small and why they're round and why they might be found in different parts of the body. I personally believe it could be some sort of tracking device.
Yes. Yeah, so I was going to say, because many times we find out if you put an EMF meter, it actually gives you a frequency when it's inside the body still.
Exactly. Yes. So I think that when we're talking about little hooded people or little grays coming into, you know, a bedroom and drilling into somebody's skull, I really think that it's because for whatever reason, that person needs to be tracked.
Yeah, that's a really good point for sure. So moving on, because I want to make sure we get to this too, the jellyfish UFO with Jeremy Corbell. Everybody in social media has seen this. We've seen the figure. A lot of people have said it's a smudge on the camera. Some people say it's just an overlap or a reflection. There's people saying that it's real and it's not real. I wanted to get your opinion on this because you've done many cases. Your opinion is really good when it comes to this kind of thing. So what do you think this jellyfish UFO thing is?
Okay, I asked, when this came out, I asked members of MUFON's photo analysis team to take a look at the video, okay? One of the things that always interests me is when these things drop, all right? So Jeremy Corbell, I have nothing against Jeremy, but it seems like, boom, it's dropping because he's got a documentary miniseries coming out. You know, the second question I ask is, why is it always the same few people that seem to get access to these leaked
videos?
Yep. All right. The third problem I have with it is that they've still not released the entire 17-minute video. All right. They released snippets of the video. I think yesterday I saw that Mr. Corbell says he will eventually release all 17 minutes of the video. But right now, you really can't conclude anything because you don't have the whole video. All right. The next thing is that Mr. Corbell said this was the raw video. All right. That is a quote. This is raw video. It's not raw video. If you download that video, it's absent of all metadata.
Right.
If the audience knows anything about digital photography and digital videos, embedded in a raw video will be the exact time, down to the tenth of a second, the exact date, and the exact geographical latitude and longitude to within 1 foot of where that video was taken. There's nothing to suggest that that's embedded in these snippets that he's releasing. So it's erroneous to say that it's raw video. Okay. Another thing one of our photo analysts noticed was that if you recall the David Fravor video, all right, of the Tic Tac with the Nimitz 2004, you will see on the edges of the video, there's all sorts of metrics going on that show the speed of the object, that show the altitude of the object. When you look at the initial snippet, all of that is absent from the screen. Our photo analyst believes that not only is this not raw video, but that it was actually somebody with a camera taking a video of the video off of a television screen with the metrics cropped out, which begs the question, why would they do that? In another part of the video, another snippet, there is some information. So the question becomes, was it one camera or was it two cameras? All right, here's where one of the major problems with the video comes in. The fellow, the Marine who was in the intelligence division, I think his name was Cyrinovsky, something like that, was stationed at the base. He said that the camera was a surveillance camera on a tethered blimp balloon for surveillance for military, for base security. So if you watch the snippets, at one point, the object's flying away, all right, and getting further and further away in the distance, which suggests that the camera was tethered to something in place and couldn't follow the object. Yet, in another snippet of the video, the camera is slightly ahead and slightly above the jellyfish and moving at the same speed. Our photo analyst thinks that the actual speed of the object was about 25 miles per hour. Since there's no metadata, there's no proof that this video was actually shot at a military base in Iraq. One of the things I noticed, they could have been airplane hangars, but it looked more to me like the back lot of Paramount Studios in Hollywood, all right? That's just my personal observation. But they also said the object was invisible. It was shot with a thermal camera. However, at one point in one snippet, you actually see two human beings looking up at it as if they notice it. So that's contradictory. We've not also found out whether or not the object really went down as a transmedium vehicle under the water and then pop up 17 minutes later, which I think they're getting the 17 minute thing confused, and that's probably a different length of time. But the final thing that bothers me is that when you read the articles about this release of the video, in some articles it says the object was filmed going out into the Persian Gulf. Now that's 25 miles an hour, all right? And in other reports, it says that it was filmed near a military base near Lake Hibernia in Iraq. So I looked up, there's no Lake Hibernia in Iraq, but there is a lake that has a similar sounding name, and there is a Royal Air Force base there. So we have two separate locations where this may have been filmed. The problem is Lake Hibernia, or Hayabat, I can't pronounce it, is 500 miles inland from the Persian Gulf. So one of the two locations is wrong, and you have to ask yourself, who's getting these two locations as where the object was allegedly filmed? One of them's got to be wrong. Both of them may be wrong. The final thing that I wanted to mention about this is, I believe I know what it is, all right? If you go on YouTube, you can actually find videos if you search for human drone. And the first videos that will pop up will show you what is essentially a low-weight styrofoam dummy of a human dressed in military fatigues. with two quadcopter blades about 18 inches wide in diameter on both sides of his shoulders, and it can take off and fly. So I believe it was some sort of surveillance drone. Why does it have spaghetti or seaweed or jellyfish-like tentacles all over it? If you look at the tentacles, they don't move.
Yes.
There's two very thick ones in the middle, which I believe are legs. All right. So what's the spaghetti stuff? I believe it's what's called a ghillie suit. Are you familiar with what a ghillie suit is?
No.
It's basically it's camouflage so that it makes somebody hiding in the bushes look like bushes. So if this thing ever landed to observe, you know, enemies outside the base, it would blend in with the vegetation in the terrain.
Okay. Okay.
And ghillie, G-H-I-E-L-L-I, I believe is how it's spelled. It's a Scottish word. And basically, when they used to have hunts in Scotland in the 1800s, there would be an observer observing the hunt hidden in the bushes from 200 years ago. And that's where the word ghillie comes from. A ghillie suit is basically a sloppy-looking bush-like camouflage. And if you look it up on Google search for images, you'll get 1,000 shots of what a ghillie suit looks like.
So yeah, there's a lot of questions here, way too many, and I don't understand why he releases videos if he doesn't have the exact facts on the video. It doesn't make sense to me, because when we release videos, MUFON, we make sure we do a thorough investigation before we release the video, so we know what we're looking at when we look at it, right?
Exactly. Yes. I don't think due diligence was done on this video. I mean, just the questions that I raised talking to you in the past 5 minutes are enough to, you know, throw doubt on the whole thing as being anything but some sort of military drone.
Yeah, it's something's not right here. And I don't like it. That's for sure. But you hit it right on the head. And that's what I was hoping you were hoping with the route you were going to go with it. So That's my thoughts exactly with this. I don't think there's something's not right here, and I think he's just throwing stuff out there to get his name back out there, in a sense, in a way, you know, just like you said with the documentary, if something's coming out, he always throws a video out.
Yes.
And it's the same grouping of people. You're exactly right. Always.
Yeah. I have some suspicions about the congressional hearings and David Rush too, but I don't know if you have time for that, but
we got about 3 minutes left. So yeah, the closed hearings that happened and the hearings I wanted to get your thoughts on.
Yeah. Just quickly, Tim Burchett, a congressman from Tennessee,
yep,
who is a very good friend of MUFON's, he walked out of that closed door hearing the other day and said, I'd give it 4 stars out of 10. The guy doesn't mince words, all right? He was underwhelmed. There was another congressman, too, who said, you know, this guy Grush was talking about, you know, non-human biologics and the off-world crash debris this past summer. And when the inspector general presented, the intelligence inspector general presented at this closed-door hearing, this congressman came out saying, I still didn't get the answers that I wanted,
right?
Okay? What's very interesting, and I'll leave you with this, is that Grush recently resurfaced again at a private party in a New York City penthouse. Have you heard that story?
No, I have not.
Yes, he actually gave a presentation at the behest of a cryptocurrency guru named DiAgostino in a penthouse in New York City. He was flown in, gave a PowerPoint presentation to 60 people that allegedly included FBI and CIA. And he made two very, very interesting assertions. One is that the United States has a craft that is 40 feet wide in diameter, but once you go inside it, it's the size of a football field. Okay, so he called it dimensional transcendentalism, something like that, where the inside of the craft was in another dimension from the outside. If you remember Travis Walton in 1975, same exact story. MUFON has about 5 other cases where you have this type of dimensional incongruity. And the last thing that Grush told this crowd was that it was a TARDIS. TARDIS is a term from Doctor Who. And basically a TARDIS is a time machine. So what does Grush know? Is it disinformation? Is he legit? I don't know, but his story is getting weirder and weirder and weirder.
That's for sure. That's definitely for sure. You know, I mean, is he telling the truth? Is he not? I mean, I think there's some aspects he's telling the truth of, but like they said when they came out of the meeting, you're talking about biologics, and it could be biologics of organisms or any kind of biologics at that point. You know, you could be talking about a bunch of different things, not necessarily alien biologics. So
that's right. If you ever read the book or seen the movie with Dustin Hoffman, Sphere, a Michael Crichton novel, it's about an American spacecraft found at the bottom of the ocean in present day. The only problem is that it was made 300 years in the future. So think about this. If in 300 years, man is on the moon and we're building craft on the moon using the magnesium and stuff, the materials of the moon, it would be an American craft being built on the moon, let's say, but it would be an off-world craft, right?
Yep.
Additionally, if that's the case, then we've got astronauts flying it, right? So when they find non-human biologics, what does that mean? Well, if it's an American off-world craft from the future, non-human biologics might just be the guy's broccoli and cheese bunch in a pouch.
That's right. Yep, 100%.
So Grush isn't lying under oath.
No.
But he's not telling the truth either.
Oh, man. It's a shame we're out of time. I'd like to go into a little more, but you're absolutely right. And it confirmed what I was thinking. So I'm happy we came to the same conclusion with this. I want to thank you for coming on again, Bob, and sharing this information with us. It's always a pleasure to talk to you and have you on and be able to hear what your investigations and the good work you're doing. So I appreciate it.
Jesse, thank you very much. And I look forward to seeing you at the festival in May.
Yes, we'll see you on May 4th at the Curiosities Festival. If anybody does want to get tickets, you can go on our website, get all the information and the ticket link there. It's ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in to episode 117. We'll see you guys next week with another special guest. And until next time, remember to keep your eyes in the sky. Well, I want to thank Robert Spearing for coming on today and sharing some of the top cases that he's worked on in 2023, as well as the updates that MUFON has been making to the organization. It's always a pleasure speaking with Robert. Really thorough work that he does, and it's somebody that I look up to in this field, doing amazing stuff. So thank you again, Robert, for coming on today and sharing all that information with us. We'll be back next week with another special episode. We have a bunch of great guests coming up, all first-time guests next month for the month of February, my birthday month. We're including Chris Evers, Michael Deschamps, Mary Rodwell, Debbie Ziegelmeyer, some great names for sure coming up. Make sure you go and check out the 2024 Curiosities Festival. That's our sponsorship for today. That's going to be on May 4th from 12 p.m. to 7 p.m. at night. It's a full day. Tickets are only $5 a person. Family five packs are $20. You're going to hear speakers on the UFO phenomenon, the paranormal, Bigfoot, live bands throughout the day, food, over 100 plus vendors. We're going to have photo ops, viewing tents, so much cool stuff. We're going to have live performances too. You're really going to like it. That's all I got to say. You can get all that information over at our website, including the ticket link at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to episode 117 today, and we'll see you guys next week for another amazing episode. And until next time, remember to keep your eyes in the sky.